Welcome to Hot Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction, haunted entertainment community. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we return again. Happy Monday to all of you. Mm-hmm. And let's see, what's this week's topic? Oh, gee golly, didn't we have a lot of fun at HauntCon?
We did.
It was a lot of fun. Can we just go back to that, the fun stuff?
It would be better.
It would be better. But yes, we are this week discussing the Great Adventure Fire, also known as the Haunted Castle Fire of 1984.
Also known as the Six Flags Fire.
Six Flags Fire, yes. If you are not familiar with this as a haunted attraction person of any stripe, you need to be very familiar with what happened here.
Right.
And here's the thing. We've had this topic in mind for a very long time. Mm-hmm. At least the last couple of months. I know I've been batting it around for even longer than that.
Yeah.
But we knew it was going to be a topic that required a lot of research because we wanted to get this as right as we could. We were just two lowly haunted attraction people. We wanted to do our best with this that we could. And also, we didn't want to cover this in the run-up to HauntCon because we wanted to keep things as light and as happy as we could. And this is a very, very, very serious topic.
Yes, other than, you know, the horrible news that we had right before HauntCon.
Yeah, well, that was not our fault.
It was not. And if you can't tell, I'm a little under the weather.
I was about to say, a few caveats with this episode. One, we are not experts in this particular topic.
Right.
When this happened, I was 4, you were 6.
Yeah.
We are old people. But we are not that old. And also, as you can hear, Crystal is under the weather.
Yeah.
The original plan with this is, after she woke up this morning barely able to talk, was that I was going to do this episode by myself. Because this is a topic I can go on for easily an hour on by myself and not really miss a beat. So if I talk more than usual, I know, shocks, that's what's going on.
Yeah.
All right. But that being said, if you do wish to send some get well cards or get well wishes to Crystal, you can definitely do so at our Twitter and our Facebook account, both of which are Haunt Weekly. We are also at hauntweekly.com and tinyworld.com/hauntweekly is our YouTube channel. Feel free to go there and find all of our previous episodes. And you can finally find our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever finer podcasts are sold. And I'm getting so much side eye right now.
Yes. Yes, you are.
See, one of the products of Crystal being ill is that like her chill for my bull goes way, way down.
Yeah, I don't have time for your shit.
I mean, you never really have time for my shit. But you really, really, really don't have time for my shit when you're feeling ill. So
yeah.
But anyways, first thing is first, let's do our conference reminders. It's an even week. That means I kick things off. Coming up later this month in Pomona, California, February 23rd and 24th, it's Haunt X, the Haunters DIY Expo at the Fairplex. They'll be touring Coffin Creek, both lights on and lights off, and also features a costume ball. Haunt X, that's Haunt and the letter X.com for more details.
Okay, then February 27th through March 2nd, it's the Maze Corn Party, Dallas, Texas, and Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. They'll be at the Westin Dallas Fort Worth Airport Hotel. That's where they're starting. They're going to be touring various mazes around Dallas and Oklahoma City, including Yesterland Farm, Maystay Farm, and more. The Maze, MAIZE.com for more info.
Okay, after that, March 21st through the 24th in St. Louis, Missouri, it's Trans World's Halloween and Attraction Show at the America Center. Co-located this year with Trans World's Christmas Show. For reasons. There will be a tour of Darkness and Lint Brewery behind the scenes, not particularly a surprise. We'll also feature a party at City Museum on Thursday, a performance by the Vampire Circus on Friday, and a Vampire Ball on Saturday. The Ha Show, HAASHOW.com for more information.
Okay. May 10th through the 12th, it's West Coast Haunters Convention in Portland, Oregon at the Doubletree Hotel Portland, touring Milburn's Haunted Manor. Also includes a costume ball, a silent auction, and the Nightmare After West Coast Haunters Convention Film Festival, with a secret selection of films. Hauntersconvention.com for more info.
All right, and after that, it's the Ohio Halloween and Haunters Convention at the Ohio State Reformatory, May 17th through 19th in Mansfield, Ohio. They'll be touring three haunted attractions, Hauntville, the Hudson House, and Haunted Hydro. There'll also be Zombie Paintball, a Freakers Ball, Costume Party, Ghost Hunt, and more. Okay, hang on. Breathe deep. Ohio Halloween and Haunters Convention.com for more information.
Yeah, but at least it makes sense.
How many characters is that? Sorry, I should not be picking on these guys.
No, they're great.
They're great guys. We love them. Great guys and gals. We love them. But man, what a domain. Anyways, go ahead.
Okay. Sorry. I got
there. We added one in.
We added one. Oh, yeah. June 7th through the 9th. And it's Midwest Haunters Convention in Schaumburg, Illinois at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center Hotel. Tours Dead Rising, Midnight Terror, Massacre, Basement of the Dead, and Hell's Gate. MidwestHauntersConvention.com for more info.
And if you are playing along, those are the same haunts we toured as part of the Lost Souls Bus Tour Chicago. Lost Souls Haunted Bus Tour in Chicago, organized by Japes. So I can testify, I've been there. Yep. They're all great haunts. Testify.
Yes.
All right, guys. Like I said in the intro, we do not have a happy episode here. No. But we do have what I think is a very important episode. So think of this as like your vegetables with the usual more upbeat stuff we provide until every news episode comes around and somebody does something stupid and we have to spend an hour bashing them for being stupid.
Well, and one of the reasons we're talking about this is because, you know, the tragic fire in Poland.
In Poland, yeah.
Last month, it killed several young...
Six people in that one, yeah.
Exactly.
And that was just it. That was like, we've been talking about discussing this for a long, long time. And that fire was like, wow, we really need to jump back into this. We need to really put this at the forefront because that was super relevant to what happened in 1984 here in the United States. And I think what's probably going to happen to escape games, especially in Poland, but possibly elsewhere, is very similar to what happened to haunted attractions after this incident.
Right.
And that's the thing. May 11th, 1984, it's a day where a major tragedy unfolded. There's just no other way to say it. And it was a day that also changed our industry forever.
Yes.
We will never be the same industry that we were before then. It was the day of the Six Flags Great Adventure Haunted Castle fire. 8 lives were lost. Several others were injured. It's kind of hard to get a count on the injured with this. But there ended up being both criminal charges filed and a significant civil lawsuit. And out of it all, a bunch of new regulations were passed. And fire marshals walked away with a very new awareness of haunted attractions.
Yeah.
You all right there?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Now, to cite our sources... Much of this information comes from the documentary Doorway to Hell, which was by James Smith, and it's about the attraction fire. It's a 50-minute documentary. You can find it on his official YouTube.
Yeah.
Just simply search for it. I'm going to post a link to the episode. It's weird. It's from the early 2000s.
Right.
And the result of that is it was uploaded on a time on YouTube in which you couldn't do more than 10-minute movies. So yeah. He uploads this 50-minute video, and it's broken up into 5 parts, but there's playlists you can go to. Mm-hmm. And put it all together. But yeah, it's not the highest quality in terms of, like, you know, bits and bytes and so forth.
Yeah.
Like, it ain't 1080p is what I'm saying.
No, it looks like it's a much older video than 2000.
But. Yeah, but it definitely took place after 2001. I'm trying to remember when it was actually recorded. I think it was uploaded 2006. So even on terms of YouTube, it's pushing 13 years old, though.
Right.
But yes. Now, Smith was a longtime attendee of the attraction in question. He had actually been there multiple times, knew it very, very well.
Right. Grew up in the area.
Grew up in the area. And had actually gone through it apparently just a week before.
Right. And at that point in time, when he was in it, mm-hmm. someone had set off smoke bombs yeah. as a joke.
and which apparently was a thing that was fairly common.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's a lot of confusion around people being confused about what's actually part of the show and what's part of the
And we're going to jump into that very deep a little bit later.
Yeah, but this is, you know, this is something that apparently happened frequently enough, and people didn't know how to evacuate in that whenever it was just smoke bombs.
Yeah. And lessons were not learned from those evacuations, apparently.
Right.
But in addition to his own experience, he interviewed several people involved, including a survivor that we're going to... Yeah.
Yes.
Suzette is her name.
Right. Yeah, and he didn't interview them on camera.
No.
He is retelling the interviews.
Yeah. He interviewed them off camera. He apparently interviewed a lot of people off camera who either weren't comfortable coming on camera or just in the nature of the documentary didn't go on camera.
Yeah.
He also used what he described, unfortunately, as virtual reality simulations of the haunt. Which they are not that.
No, they are not.
They are helpful 3D animations. Don't get me wrong. They're super useful and actually pretty well done for the time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he oversold that part a wee little bit.
It's kind of adorable.
Yeah, and to give my honest review on the documentary as a whole, I thought most of it was very good and very helpful.
Yeah.
He did a very good job retelling what happened. He provided video evidence of most of the points he was making. He did a pretty good job overall. Now, he lost the plot in the last 10 minutes a little bit.
Yeah.
I can't tell if he thought he was telling a ghost story or if he was trying to make a religious point or whatever, but it kind of went off in the left field somewhere and wandered around there for a little bit.
Yeah.
In the last act a little bit. So, but still, overall, the information was very, very good. And also, if you're interested, there is a book by James Smith in the Kindle bookstore you can pick up. It's like $3. Mm. We have not read the book. I actually only learned about the book's existence super recently.
Jonathan, speak the last hour.
Yeah. But yeah, I've only learned about it super recently, so I've not read the book. I'm going to actually pick it up and go through it, though, I think is what I am going to do.
Yeah.
See if there's any information that wasn't in the documentary, and we can follow up on a later episode. But long story short, we've watched that documentary, watched a couple other shorter documentaries. We've done other research online, visiting sites, retelling it.
Mm-hmm.
I've even read all the Wikipedia page about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've done a lot of research, but we do not claim to be experts in this, just to be very, very clear. So, yeah, citing our sources as best we can. So, let's begin with a brief history of the attraction. It was located at the Six Flags Great Adventure Theme Park, which is in the Jackson Township in New Jersey. The Haunted Castle opened in 1978. It was originally called the Haunted House. It was built and operated by Tom's River. This is very confusing. It's Tom's River's name of a town. Tom's River Haunted House Company. They also owned and operated the Doorway to Hell, a casino a haunted attraction located on Casino Pier in New Jersey.
Yes.
Now, the original attraction was sort of meant to be a small-scale test to see if there was a place for a haunted house at Six Flags Great Adventure. It passed. It was torn down and reopened in 1979. Now, the interesting thing is how the attraction was built. It was built using 17 tractor trailers, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically two attractions in one. Or rather, it was the same attraction repeated and mirrored with a center control room.
Yeah.
So the idea was this could let it handle twice the throughput as one attraction could. You could go in either the left or the right-hand side, I was guessing it was left or right, and get the same experience, but the turns would be mirrored to one another.
Yeah.
There was a control room in the center between the two attractions, and there was a huge multi-story facade put up front, a 2.5-story facade that was a castle.
Yeah. Oh, it's a haunted castle.
What'd you expect?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Now, there was some confusion. Some places seemed to indicate that this was a dark ride. It was not.
No.
It was a traditional free roam, or what we think of today as traditional. I mean, the dark rides probably would go back further than
yeah.
free roam haunts, but that's neither here nor there. It was a free roam haunted attraction with multiple rooms and scenes and props. And basically it flowed between the tractor trailers with plywood filling the gaps between them. So you would walk between them and theoretically not even realize you were doing that.
Yeah, and we've been in several haunted attractions that are put together with trailers.
Some were okay, some were less okay.
Yeah, Beulah Fun Park.
Oh, my freaking baby Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, we need to go into that one later.
Okay. Glad there wasn't a fire there.
Oh, God. If there had been a fire in Beulah Fun Park, just kill me now, because...
Yeah.
I'm dead.
Well, and they were using the sparky thing, so...
Oh, God, you know. It was very likely, even.
Yeah.
Oh, but anyways, that's neither here nor there. Now, when it was originally constructed, the attraction did not have air conditioning.
Yeah.
And that actually is a surprisingly important point to our story. People, you know, customers and actors alike were fainting due to the extreme. And just imagine, basically, when you tethered, you know, 8 of these tractor trailers together and filled them with wood and plywood and props and no ventilation to speak of.
No airflow.
No airflow. You created what's basically a giant tinderbox.
Yeah.
So you've created a definite heat trap there, and people and actors were fainting in the heat, even, you know, considering it was New Jersey and not as hot as it might be in like a southern state.
Right.
It was still more than enough, and I think I probably would have had the same problems. AC was retrofitted in. They did it sort of in a predictable way where they ran hoses underneath the tractor trailers and used vents underneath to act as both inflow and outflow for the air conditioning. That becomes a very important point.
Yeah.
However, the haunt did not get its proper safety upgrades. According to the township and according to other authorities, it was considered a temporary structure.
Right.
This was because it was built on wheels.
Yes.
And because of that, the fire departments did not enforce the very basic compliance, including smoke detectors, sprinkler systems, things like that.
Yeah, it didn't sound like they even looked at it.
No, the fire, and we'll get into the fire drill they did like a month before. But yeah, they didn't really even inspect it for these things.
No.
Is my understanding. The original haunt only had 2 emergency exits. But they added more after a safety consultant came in and said, you really should add some more safety exits. However, but not all of the exits were added. One potentially crucial one was not added because it would have been front-facing and it would have involved altering the facade in some way that might have been less than visually appealing.
Yes, because, you know, it's more important to be pretty.
Yeah, be pretty versus be safe.
Yeah.
Other changes were also not made. A sprinkler system was advised at that time. Mm-hmm. Various other changes were recommended and were not made. Some were made. In fact, I think they said most were made, but not all.
Mm-hmm.
The haunt had a very serious issue with vandalism, violent customers, and the misuse of emergency exits.
Yeah.
This is the part of the story that really befuddled me for a time.
Yeah, it befuddles me too.
Well, it doesn't so much now. Now that we've gotten through all the details, I think I understand how this happened. Mm-hmm. But basically, they had a recurring problem with customers attacking actors, customers vandalizing the property, customers slipping out emergency exits to smoke weed or play pranks or I don't know.
Fool around.
I don't know. Sometimes customers are idiots, you know?
Yeah.
You can't really predict it.
Yes.
So the haunt made several changes to it in order to combat this. One was they put up a fence around one particular actor area, the Phantasm area, I think is what it was called.
Right.
The Phantom area, not Phantasm, yeah. Phantom area. This was to stop customers from just violently attacking that actor that was in there.
Yes.
It also, however, blocked one of the easiest emergency exits.
I thought that there were 2 exits in that area.
Yeah, there were 2 exits in that area.
Okay.
But
I thought they were both behind the fence after they put
yeah,
the fence
they were.
Up.
They actually blocked 2. I think you're right. No, I'm coughing. See what you got me doing, Crystal? I blame you.
You can this time.
Yeah, I legitimately can. So there were 2 emergency exits behind there. They would have been the best and easiest ones for people to escape from.
Yeah.
They were blocked by what looked to be like a 5-foot-high or 6-foot-high fence.
Yeah.
Allegedly, another emergency exit, this one also in the area of the fire, was chained. Now, this is hot debate topic time. No one really knows if this happened.
Yeah.
A customer who came through before the fire reported it had been chained. There were other reports of the emergency exit having been chained.
Mm-hmm. To keep people from going out.
Going out and smoking weed or vandalizing or doing random crap. Basically not being where they're supposed to be. Now, since the exit door was plywood, it likely burned up in the fire.
Yeah.
So we really have no idea. There's no evidence one way or the other as to what happened here, other than eyewitness testimony saying it was there. But Six Flags says absolutely not. It was never chained.
Right.
So we don't know. But allegedly that happened. They also had issues with smoke detectors being destroyed and not replaced. According to one report, they bought residential smoke detectors and put them up. And then when they were inevitably destroyed by vandalizing customers, they just simply weren't put back. And they also kept cutting back the number of actors.
Right. And I do want to mention, because I don't see it here, that when these changes were made, when the fence was added, when the chain may or may not have been put in, these extra changes were made after the original company was no longer running the attraction.
Yeah, Tom's River Haunted House Company had not been involved in it at this point.
At least three years.
According to the documentary, they had a thing where they leased, like Six Flags kind of leased the building from them.
Yeah.
And leased their management services.
Yeah.
For a period, I think it was 4 years.
Yeah.
3 or 4 years. And then when that was done, Six Flags had the option to buy for a stupid low price of $100.
Yeah, I would have bought it for that.
I mean, Christ, you could do almost anything with that.
Especially back then.
Yeah. So Six Flags bought it, and Tom's River was not directly involved with those particular changes. They were involved in the construction.
The initial, yes.
And a bunch of other stuff that can be...
Right.
They contributed, we'll say.
Yeah.
But these particular changes, according to the documentary, were not. You were right.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like they were the ones that put the fence up to block the exits.
No, that does not appear to have been them.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, fewer and fewer actors, though, kept getting put in there. In fact, there was only one actor working the night of the fire.
Right.
And on April 1st, 1984, the haunt underwent a fire drill with the local fire department.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. The fire department actually saw no issues, even though they had some significant issues getting their fire trucks to the attraction because of where it was positioned behind a moat and a bunch of trees and stuff.
Right.
There were significant issues getting to it, but they considered it a rousing success, mostly because they were able to rescue someone in a storage unit that was atop the attraction, which seems silly because no one would be in there.
Yeah, no one was ever there.
So anyways, now this brings us to the fire itself. Mm-hmm. And it's important to note before we begin, at the time of the fire, only half the haunt was open.
Yeah.
Remember how I said there was two halves to it, two mirrored sides of it? Only one half was working. Apparently, on this particular day in May, they didn't feel they had the need to have both sides open, so only half of it was open.
Right.
So only 9 of the 17 trailers, 8 for the customers, 1 for the control room, were in use. But at 6:35 p.m. on Friday, May 11th, 1984, a fire started, and it is believed to have been started at the end of the quote-unquote strobe light room.
Right.
Now, the strobe light room was actually a long hallway with disorienting effects on the wall and a strobe light at the very end that was meant to really, really disorient you as you went through. Now, the strobe, according to several reports, was not functioning.
Which is interesting.
At the time of the fire. And so that hallway was extremely dark. And there had been a long tradition in this haunt, and long tradition by that I mean this never should have happened, but it kept happening, of customers in dark sections pulling out lighters to see the way. Now, at the end of the strobe light room, there was a flammable polyurethane pad. By the way, I'm very impressed I spelled polyurethane correct on the first try in the show notes. but there was basically the idea was you were disoriented and people were crashing to the end of the wall and injuring themselves. So they put up a foam pad made out of very, very, very flammable polyurethane.
Yes.
And the prevailing theory is that it was started by a youth with a cigarette lighter. Now, one account says he was emotionally disturbed and was doing this deliberately.
Mm-hmm.
Another says he couldn't see down the dark hallway and had a cigarette lighter and was using it to see.
Yeah.
Those are the two competing stories of how that happened, and we'll probably never know the full truth.
Yeah, I doubt it.
But anyways, one way or another, that pad caught fire and caught fire quick.
Mm-hmm.
The fire spread through the haunt, and it was aided by a combination of highly combustible materials. Most of the haunt was built by using completely untreated plywood and other wood that was not fire treated in any way.
Yeah.
It was between that and the AC system, which was constantly blowing and never stopped even after the fire was detected.
Yeah. So, you know,
literally fanning the flames.
Exactly. Oxygen is needed. So
those two things helps. Combined cause this fire to spread amazingly and breathtakingly quick.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of this, people struggled to escape, as you might expect.
Yeah.
Many initially thought that the fire and the attempts to get patrons out was just part of the show.
Yeah.
In fact, the very first people to spot the fire was a couple of adults who saw it at the end around a corridor.
Yeah.
They just thought it was an effect.
Yeah.
And then they saw and smelled the smoke and realized, holy shit, no, this isn't an effect. This is an actual fire.
Yeah.
We need a GTFO. So they start trying to warn people, and people start thinking they're just actors trying to scare them.
Yeah. Which is not the case.
No, it was not the case.
Instance.
So, and even those who did attempt to flee were not sure where to go. They ended up having to make their way back through the confusing maze for the most part to the entrance or to the exit the other way.
Yeah.
Very few use the emergency exit. And then you have the allegations that one of the key emergency exits was chained shut. But even without that, it was a huge struggle.
Yeah.
People did not know where to go. People did not know what to do. It was a very confusing time. But still, in spite of that, 29 people were inside the attraction at the time the fire started. 21 still did get out.
Yes.
And emphasis is appropriately placed on the 8 who did die. That is fair and accurate, but it is worth noting 21 people did get out.
Right.
Those 8 people who were unable to escape was part of a group of 9 who were in the rolling barrel room. Basically, this, from the way it's been described, is like what we would think of today as a vertigo tunnel.
Or a vortex tunnel.
Or a vortex tunnel. But instead of like the whole thing being open and visible,
yeah,
they had little windows that let you see into the vortex part of it.
Right.
So, all of the members of this group were aged between 14 and 17. One girl from the group was rescued by employee Gary Kaplow. Gary Kaplow, by the way, is still an active Six Flags employee as of 6 months ago. And I have nothing bad or negative to say about him at all. By all accounts, he's a damned hero who got this girl out and great personal risk to himself.
Yeah, he ran back in after getting
most
of
the
other people out.
He was told while he was outside about the fire. He ran in. He rescued one girl and thought, in all honesty, because this girl had apparently crawled from the group.
Yeah, well, she was trying to get ahead of them because apparently they were trying to trample.
Yeah.
Slower movers.
Yeah. He got her out. Nothing but kudos to him and his effort there. He deserves all the credit in the world.
Yeah.
He worked what he described as a roamer.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Six Flags, in lieu of the sprinkler system and the fire detection system, would have an employee in uniform that simply roamed the attraction pretty much constantly.
Yeah.
And that was his gig, from what he described. This is from the comments he made on another YouTube video. I'll link to that as well in the show notes. A short mini doc by Theme Park History. There was only an 11-minute one, but it talks about it. And he actually does kind of like a mini AMA in it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, initially after the fire started, only the park's fire department was called. The park has its own tiny little fire department to handle these things.
Right.
They were called, and the reason was because of what we discussed previously with incidents involving smoke bombs and stink bombs and other vandalisms.
Yeah.
They didn't take it seriously. Reports of fires and smoke inside the haunted castle were common.
Yeah.
They didn't take it seriously when they got on scene and found it was a real fire. They were ill-equipped to handle it. They didn't have pumper trucks. There wasn't adequate water pressure. There was a bunch of problems.
Right.
Eventually, some 13 area fire departments got involved. Everyone and their brother was called to it. and they managed to get the fire under control amazingly by 7:45, about an hour after it began.
Yeah.
That, considering all the obstacles they had, that is amazing work.
Yeah, it is.
It should not take an hour to put out a fire like this, but they had a lot of handicaps, and kudos to them. That was hard work and amazing. They did the best they could. Now, the park remained open during the day, during the fire. It did close early, about 2 hours early at 8 p.m. after it was all done. But here's the thing, and here's the reason why that is more understandable. A, there was a big concert and an event going on way far away.
Yeah, Golden Earring was playing.
Yeah, is that the name of them?
Yes.
Who the fuck is Golden Earring? Anyways,
I've heard of them.
They were playing and they were pretty far separated from it. So there was no danger to anyone else in the park, realistically, at the time. And there had been no indication there was loss of life. Even as the park closed at 8, they believed everyone had gotten out.
Yeah.
They had full belief that everyone had left. The bodies were not discovered until late that night.
Yeah, as firemen were going through and thought that they...
They were putting out hot spots and...
Yeah, and they were initially written off as mannequins.
They were props.
Yeah.
The truth was only learned much later. And then the full weight of the tragedy kicked in. And when it was over, 8 young people lost their lives. Like I said, aged between 14 and 17.
Mm-hmm.
And news slowly started trickling out about the loss of life. And a huge backlash began to build against Six Flags.
Right.
Now, this kicks us into the immediate aftermath. This led to an investigation into the haunt. And a state panel pretty much immediately found that there had been a dozen violation of a fire code.
Yeah. From hearing about it, that's not a shock.
Yeah, this, a dozen is, I think, an underestimation, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The fire department said they had not enforced even the most basic regulations because the township's inspector said the code did not apply. It was considered a temporary structure since it was on wheels, even though it had been there 5 years.
Yeah.
And I understand that fire codes are sometimes wonky. I mean, our tent area, our queue line area, for example, mm-hmm. is considered a temporary structure.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, we did design it so it can flat pack pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that still seems kind of an awkward way to define that.
Yeah, it does.
On September 14th, 1984, a grand jury indicted Six Flags Great Adventure, Six Flags, the parent company, and two park executives on charges of aggravated manslaughter. The executives took a pretrial intervention deal that basically helped them avoid trial in exchange for community service. And the criminal trial involving the companies began in May 1985.
Mm-hmm.
After 8 weeks of trial and 13 hours of deliberation, the jury found the company not guilty. Now, there was a lot of controversy into the evidence that was presented at the trial, in particular the evidence of two fire experts who testified that sprinklers could not have saved the lives. That is something that goes directly against the National Fire Protection Association's view of the case.
Right, and they were asked to leave the NFPA after their testimony.
Yeah. But in the end, the jury was most swayed by the fact that the officials never ordered Six Flags to either get a permit or add the sprinklers or take any of these steps.
Right.
And like I said, the debate over what sprinklers would have done in this case is still a fairly tense one. The National Fire Protection Association says, yes, it absolutely would have helped.
Right.
So like I said, two of them doing the analysis said no. They claimed that basically the building was made out of such flammable material and was so ready to go up, basically, that the sprinklers would not have had time to help.
Yeah, that is the claim.
I struggle with that claim.
Yeah.
Because I've been in the room when sprinklers kicked on before. It happened once on accident in university.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily not in my dorm. I would have been very pissed if it had been there. No significant damage was done. It was over a chemistry lab, actually. But the result of it is, I know how quickly those kick on and how much water they dump out.
Right.
A well-designed sprinkler system, I think, could have at least delayed the fire and maybe given those eight a chance to escape.
Right.
Whether it would have put it out and stopped it, that's debatable definitely to me, but I think it would have delayed it and possibly delayed it enough.
Yeah.
Neither here nor there, though. Four of the families initially filed civil lawsuits. In the end, seven of the eight families settled for $2.5 million damages apiece. The eighth took it to court. They got $750,000, meaning they were better off taking the settlement. As for Six Flags itself, park attendance was down for the rest of the year. The park in the off-season added $5.2 million in sprinklers and fire suppression system technology, including heat sensors, advanced smoke detectors, and other things. The park says the attendance was restored next year.
Yeah.
However, industry sources say that the park nearly closed 3 years later due to low attendance. So, once again, conflicting information.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they think that the fire suppression sprinklers wouldn't help, and then they spent all the money to put it everywhere.
And
then
that's one of it would be funny if it weren't so tragic. How's that?
Yeah.
That they didn't add the sprinklers, they ixnayed the sprinklers, they ixnayed the advanced smoke detection systems because it was, quote-unquote, too expensive.
Yeah.
But then after the tragedy, they're making it rain on fire suppression.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, that was rough. I apologize. That was an accident. I apologize. Yep. Ooh. Son of a bitch. Oh, that's a rough one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very sorry, everyone. If you unsubscribed due to that pun, I completely understand. Will not stop you. But yeah, so the park is still in operation today. It did eventually recover one way or the other. Now, afterwards, Six Flags did several things that are, just to be honest, in poor fucking taste.
Yeah, no kidding.
There's no nice way to say it. First, they did bring back haunted attractions. They added a Brutal Planet haunted attraction, which, while safer and actually following the NFPA code and all that and doing all that right, began with a vertigo tunnel similar to the Barrel Room.
Yeah.
And then featured a fire hallway with a devil at the end.
Yeah. You can't make this shit up.
You can't. It's like, did no one go, dudes, maybe not our attraction can do this.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not us. And then they also added a Castle Escape VR experience, which has guests attempt to escape a virtual reality haunted and burning castle.
Yes. With smoke, fake FX smoke coming out.
Promoting it, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, it's such poor taste. And here's the other kicker. There is no plaque, no acknowledgement at Six Flags Great Adventure about the fire.
No.
And I understand the logic behind not having it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to give any indication that your attraction was ever unsafe.
Right.
But it still seems like a very subtle, simple thing you can do.
It does.
If it's somewhere out of the way, even if it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because this is a tragedy. And putting it there, to me, as a customer, would indicate that you learned from it. You grew from it. And you're not just trying to sweep it under the rug and move on.
Yeah.
Like, look, we did stupid things. People died. We are genuinely sorry. We're trying to be better now. And we wish to honor those and remember those who were lost.
Yeah.
But they haven't done that.
No.
Now, I know we're down to the last 10 minutes of our podcast, and it's been a rough ride, but this is where we get to the industry impacts. And while I recognize the industry impacts are not nearly as important as the lives lost, this is a podcast about haunted attractions and the haunted attraction industry, so therefore it's only appropriate to discuss them.
Yes.
The biggest and most obvious was the new fire code standards that were launched for haunts because of this, as a direct relationship.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to have, you know, things you have to have in your haunt, like sprinklers, the egress lighting, the means to shut off confusing sounds in an emergency, the proper emergency lighting, and the PA system, and many, many more, they stem directly from, or their enforcement directly stems from, this incident.
Right.
You know, and a lot of this is stuff we kind of take for granted in the industry in 2019.
Yeah.
But it began somewhere. This is where it began.
Yeah.
Especially in terms of fire marshals making goddamn sure you got it.
Yeah.
And the big element here is the sprinklers. And that's one of the things I've always found kind of weird about this, was Six Flags and others say, oh, the sprinklers couldn't help. The sprinklers wouldn't have done a damn thing. Right. The sprinklers couldn't have saved the lives. The very first regulation to come out of it, haunts have to have sprinklers in customer areas.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a coincidence.
I don't either.
I find that very, very weird that Six Flags and others doth protest too much and then sprinklers become the number one new regulation.
Yeah.
That's a very, very interesting argument, Six Flags.
It is.
And I think, and honestly, I think it's a good thing that it did come out of it, because I am glad that haunts have to do it now and haunts do have to think about these things.
Yeah.
But I will say it's, I don't know. It's just super interesting to hear the arguments that it wouldn't have helped. And it's worth noting that in the United States, at least, no one else has died in a haunted attraction fire since.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of anyone. If I'm wrong, please correct me. I will fix it next episode.
Yeah.
But I'm not aware of any other deaths in a haunted attraction fire.
Right. And one of the things I've been thinking about since watching this and thinking about it for the show is that there could be more training in what to do on a fire for your staff, for your actors. Yeah. Because I know in the haunts that we've worked at, we never got any training. Okay, if a fire breaks out or an emergency happens.
I didn't even get a damn handbook.
Well, no, you're not going to get a handbook a lot of times.
I didn't even get like a cheat sheet or something.
But, you know, grab a flashlight, start yelling fire and leading people towards exits. Make sure there's nobody in your immediate scene.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't get any of that. And I'm thinking that really should be part of actor training.
Yeah, I agree.
Is how to get people out in an emergency. And I think maybe it's something, because of all the confusion for customers in this, they didn't know what was part of the scene and what wasn't. I think that maybe in the rules or somewhere have something that says, if an emergency happens,
this lights, X, Y, and Z will happen.
Exactly. Look for X, Y, and Z. X, Y, and Z will happen. That way you know it's not part of the show.
It's a bit like with circuses.
Yeah.
If something happens in a circus, yeah. If you're ever at a circus, which there are no circuses anymore, I don't know why I'm even giving this warning now. It's like warning about, you know, horse-drawn carriages or something.
Occasionally there'll be one that comes through.
But if you're at a circus and the band starts playing Stars and Stripes Forever, run.
Yeah.
Just run like a motherfucker and don't look back.
Yeah.
That is the emergency cue that is to them.
Yeah.
And like in a wrestling show, if you see, and I can't demonstrate it, but if you see anyone put the X sign above their head, that means there's a real injury.
Hmm.
Things like that. There are symbols that we can use and maybe we should convey to our customers, let them know when the emergency is real.
Yeah.
We should make these open secrets.
Yeah, I really think that would be good, because as a customer who's been to hundreds of haunts,
yeah,
I've never seen anything tell me what
will happen in an emergency, in a real emergency.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here's the thing. The rules require them to have a PA system and to be able to stop the confusing lights and sounds. But here's the thing. If you're a customer embedded in the haunt experience, you might still think that's part of the haunt experience.
Exactly. I mean, I'm thinking
it's
about
better. You're less likely to believe it than,
yeah, I mean,
than someone yelling fire.
Yeah. I mean, I probably would know what's up because I'm a haunter and we look at this stuff.
Yeah, and we know
what's normal for a haunt and what's not.
Yeah.
But customers just going through it for their first time, or
they might just assume it's part of the show. That's a good point, even with all these extreme changes.
Exactly.
Never underestimate people's ability to get lost in the moment.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. To get back on it, the next impact is that fire marshals were ultimately blamed for this.
Yeah.
They ultimately, literally, Jackson Township's fire marshal took the blame for this.
Yeah.
Pretty much square.
Well, and I think that they probably deserve
some of it. There's blame for everybody.
There
it
is.
Goes around.
They deserve some of it.
It goes around. They deserve some of it. But I don't think they deserve all of it.
No.
Because here's the thing. Stupid laws definitely come into play here.
Yeah.
And also the promise of Six Flags and the money of Six Flags helped him shovel some additional blame onto him, I think.
Right.
Or her. I don't know if it was him or her, honestly. But yeah, the fire marshal got all the blame for this, pretty much, ultimately.
Yeah.
And yeah, fire marshals around the country remember this.
Yeah.
And when you come to them and say, we want to open a haunted attraction,
yeah,
this is what they're going to remember.
Yeah.
Never forget that.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you wonder why fire marshals seem to ride haunted houses extra hard, here you go.
Yeah.
This is it. This is why. 8 people died. Fire marshals got blamed.
Yeah.
That's really all you need to know. And it's like we said, many of the laws that we deal with come directly from this, even if sometimes, and okay, oftentimes, they are overbearing and not super helpful with actually being safe. Because there is the pendulum swinging too far the other way element of it.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, the laws have definitely gone too far in terms of trying to keep people safe and actually maybe working against that goal and putting haunts out of business at the same time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is why. And it's also worth noting that in the immediate aftermath of this, many haunts, especially in that area, shut down while they were pending fire marshal inspections or just shut down because they knew they couldn't pass them.
Yeah.
And one of those haunts was Doorway to Hell,
which
was the original haunt opened by Tom's River Haunted House Company.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. And I mean, this is the thing that we're seeing over in Poland now, escape rooms, is that once one tragedy happens, all the others are being looked at and many have been closed down.
Yeah. Now, this is the Monday morning quarterbacking portion of the show as we wrap this up, which is an appropriate term to use the day after the Super Bowl.
Yes.
The mistakes made by Six Flags, no dispute.
Nope.
No one can dispute these. One, the lack of fire retardant chemicals and products used in the haunt.
Yeah.
Look up, don't watch the videos, but look up the Great White Fire.
Mm-hmm.
It was very similar, but even more tragic in terms of the number of people who died. And that was a very similar situation where very, very not fire retardant chemicals were used in a space that really, really, really should have had fire retardant chemicals.
Yeah.
And people died.
Yeah.
Yeah. They, Six Flags, basically made their entire haunt out of, you know, basically, according to what I've read, kindling.
Yeah.
Plus, you know,
Fuel.
Yeah. In terms of the foam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, and then something bad happened. The second mistake was the lack of proper fire detection. The smoke detectors were removed and not replaced.
Mm-hmm.
I understand vandalism sucks and is expensive. They could have invested in a fire suppression system that could not have been vandalized.
Right. And they could have gotten the commercial smoke detectors that are hardwired in, so then they couldn't be vandalized.
There were ways they could have dealt with that.
Yeah.
They did use a roamer. They, like I said, they didn't like completely ignore fire safety. And like I say, Gary Kaplow is a hero.
Right.
By all accounts. He's a hero. Straight truth. And he still works at Six Flags as of 6 months ago.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, he obviously has a different view of this. But yeah, there was inadequate fire suppression system, even him as a roamer, even as having a person go through every so often. That's not the same as having a smoke detector in room that can detect the second smoke hits.
Right.
Because if you've got a 10-minute walkthrough on your haunt, and you got a roamer, that means you're up to 10 minutes out of spotting a fire.
Yeah.
And in 10 minutes, a fire is, you know,
mm-hmm.
a fire goes from a problem to you're already destroyed.
Yeah.
An entire fire happens in 10 minutes sometimes.
Yeah.
There was also complete lack of adequate personnel. And this was what drove me crazy watching the documentary. Not just the lack of fire suppression and all that. The lack of adequate personnel. The haunt kept cutting back the people that were in it over time. Fewer and fewer people. And back by the time of the actual fire, many of the actor stations were unmanned.
Yeah.
Including the Phantom area, which had the fence.
Right. Yes.
There were simply not enough employees inside the haunt. If you have a rampant vandalism slash people sneaking off an emergency exit slash violence problem, you do not have enough warm bodies in that haunt.
Right. And one of the key areas that had not had an actor in a few years, from what it sounds like, is by that, at the end of that hallway where the fire started, near the exit.
Yeah. There was no one there, and there should have been. And that's just it. It's like, Six Flags tried to run this attraction, for the most part, like it ran every other ride at the park, where basically you put the you have someone at front who puts the customer into the ride, they go onto the ride, and they don't see another employee until they get off the ride.
Yeah.
And you can't run a haunted attraction that way. Not a free roam one. You can do a dark ride that way.
Right.
But you can't do a haunted attraction that way.
Well, and I mean, the Mr. Smith, the person who did this documentary, talked about how he and his friends would just hang out in there. Like, they were hanging out in the window room.
Yeah, in the barrel room. Yeah, they would just hang out there and mess around.
For hours, doing God knows what.
Probably nothing as bad as setting fire to it, but...
Well, no.
But still, that should not be possible.
Right. Can you imagine your customers hanging out for just hours in your haunt?
Yeah. Just milling around, not doing anything.
Yeah.
For no reason.
No.
Yeah. No. There was no forward momentum. There was no clearing out. They did not have enough actors and enough employees in that haunt to control it.
Right.
And then there are the issues of poor design. I mean, the inadequate emergency exits, the inadequate planning for a fire, and general recklessness. These guys definitely did the build first, think later element of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They built it and then tried to retrofit in safety rather than starting from the position of safety, which is a huge mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the controversial mistakes. The chained emergency exit, which is the huge debate with this. We don't know if there was an emergency exit chained or not. We never will know.
Right.
But if it was, that is a tremendous problem. And it points back to the lack of personnel. Because supposedly the reason it was chained was because people would slip out to smoke weed in the little hallway right outside it.
Yeah.
And if that's a recurring problem, it's a problem because you don't have adequate security and adequate people, and you didn't build this to an adequate level to prevent that.
Yeah.
And then the lack of a sprinkler system. Some feel it wouldn't have helped. Most feel it would have. I think at least it would have delayed the fire enough to let everyone get out. It might not have put it out. It might not have prevented the place from burning down.
Yeah.
But it would have, I think, at least given them a chance.
Yeah.
And from the way it was now, they didn't have a chance.
Right.
So, quick lessons for haunters in 2019. It is really, really difficult to evacuate a haunt in a fire.
Yeah.
There's a confusing layout. There's props, and everyone thinks that you're just messing with them. Everyone goes to a haunt expecting to be lied to.
Yeah.
Be told things that aren't true. So when you tell them, hey, there's a fire, and there's actually a fire, they may not believe you.
Right.
This is one of the reasons why you were talking about, where maybe we need an industry-wide sign. Hey, this is an actual emergency. And sure, turning off everything and bringing the house lights up would indicate that to me very clearly.
Right.
And would indicate, I think, to most people, yeah, that being even more clear never hurts.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Well, and also, if you have a siren along with that, though, but you're in a contamination scene and they've got a siren in there, it could be confusing.
It could be. It still could be confusing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're kind of the extreme end of this.
Yeah.
Next lesson, your material and coatings really matter. You know, I'm going to say this, having been spent the day really researching this and the looking in we did previously, we're already huge on fireproofing and fire coating and all that.
Yeah.
We're doubling down. We're getting really big. Mm-hmm. Our haunt is super small. I don't think we would have this issue. But yeah, I'm getting fucking doubly serious about this, even more serious than I was.
Yeah.
It matters. As does ventilation, specifically how you ventilate.
Mm-hmm.
This fire was fed because they did the floor ventilation.
Right.
other types of ventilation. I'm not an expert on this, but I think other types of ventilation wouldn't create the same issues. But also, just make sure the AC cuts off if there's a fucking fire.
Yeah.
It's really, really difficult to predict how people will react in an actual emergency.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's impossible. And that's one of the things that became clear in the documentary especially, was that people reacted in very different ways. Some more helpful than others.
Yeah.
You have to assume that. And basically, you just have to assume that every patron that goes through your haunt is a pyromaniac who is actively on fire at the time he's going through your haunt.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you may not be fire retardant enough in this. Because, yeah, you can't have a fire in a haunted attraction.
No.
You just can't. Even with all the precautions that we take today, even with all the steps, there's no way to guarantee that everyone can get out safely.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this was there was a lot of lessons in this for me. I'm still hopelessly pissed at Six Flags for all the negligence they put into this, all that they did wrong. I'm grateful to Gary Kaplow for getting one person out and risking his own life to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Six Flags and the others behind the haunt definitely made a ton of mistakes, and this industry has not been the same for it. I mean,
we've been better.
But yeah, and I think a lot of it is that we have improved because of it. We have learned, we have improved.
Right.
But also, it's like I said, if you want to know why your fire marshal seems to hate you every time he or she comes to see you, here you go.
Yeah.
This episode. Now you know. It's just truth. Fire marshals fear exactly this type of story. Not only do people die in a fire.
Yeah.
And that was totally preventable, and the loss of life was totally preventable, but they get blamed for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I sympathize with the fire marshals. I got to be honest.
Yeah.
Not a phrase often uttered by haunters, but there you go. Just the truth.
They're trying to keep everybody safe.
Yeah, they are. And this has them, understandably, scared out of their mind. Even 25 years later. We're coming to the 25th anniversary of this.
Yeah.
No, wait, 35th. I'm sorry. 30. My math sucks. 35th anniversary of this.
Yeah.
Wow. Anyways, everyone, thank you for making it through this episode with us. This has been Haunt Weekly, episode number was 166.
Yes.
Talking about the 1984 Haunted Castle Fire at the Great Adventure theme park in Jackson, New Jersey, the Six Flags Great Adventure in Jackson, New Jersey. You can visit us at hauntweekly.com or Haunt Weekly on Twitter, Haunt Weekly on Facebook. You can also find us on tinyurl.com/hauntweekly. Almost forgot that one. That's our YouTube channel. And also, we are at iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this has been a very, very sad episode of Haunt Weekly. We hope to return to you next week with something more upbeat. We will see you guys next time.